Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Tiger Minor League Report podcast. Week 3 recap here at TigersMLReport.com. I am Rohelli Castillo, and Simon's Brandon Day and Chris Brown. And Brandon Day joining us from BlessYouBoys.com. There's a lot to get to this week. Plenty of recap, including a big week for Justice Bigby and the Lakeland Flying Tigers. And I mean, there's just been a lot. Yeah. And did the Wings score there?
They did. Yes. Okay. Sorry. Awesome. I don't normally care that much, but man, it's been like super frenzied the last like 5 minutes, and they pulled the goalie and they tied it with a minute 17 left.
I want to care about playoff hockey again so badly. So yeah. It would be great if they got in.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay. No, it's totally 100% the appropriate thing to do. We are fans of the sport, so might as well tune in on that. But, so the Tigers lose 1-0 to the Texas Rangers. It's wasted a very good effort from Lee Olson. The Tigers offense will continue. You felt good about yesterday. They came back in the eighth. Javi Baez had a home run. And then just flat out. Basura. That's my dad would say, basura. You have Michael Lorenz on the ropes several times where he was drawing, the Tigers were drawing walks, they had runners in scoring position, and they went 0-for-8.
What an asshole.
it was infuriating to watch, and Olson was dealing, and then you see what you like to call, I saw somebody on Twitter referred to as 1960s baseball, because that's how it looks with the Tigers right now, offensively speaking. And it was an interesting comment too on Twitter where somebody said, I give you guys respect, I meant no disrespect, but you guys are, what was the exact, well, here's the exact line. I give you a lot of props, man. And this is from Sauce at Saucy Lions. For years, we've seen all these hitters prospects dominate the minors and come up and suck. There's no way I could keep doing knowing that none of them will pan out. But you guys are really good at what you do, so I mean no disrespect. And I look at it this way. I just look at the guys like Cole Keith, they'll pan out, and I firmly believe that. Fine. Yeah.
Yep.
And it's a thing where, honestly, gentlemen, what the Tigers have not been able to do, think about it from a spending standpoint. We all know they're not going to spend, or they're going to spend a lot, if anything. But if there's one thing that this team still needs to do identify-wise, is that at some point you got to get bold with the trade. You got to do something, but they're going to stay pat. And as much as I don't want to sound like a negative Nancy or a dick or whatever, it's going to be brutal this summer if it continues at this trend, though. Fans are just, I mean, we're not even in the middle of, we're just at the middle point of April right now. And at 9-7, it's still just unsatisfying.
Yeah, I don't really want to give in to that yet because, it could happen that the team is just terrible all season long. But, I mean, I think we all know some of these guys are going to hit better than they have been. Spencer Torkelson is a complete disaster. I mean, you can be as frustrated as you want with his 1-1 status and the fact that he's been erratic and, reminds me of, like, streaky late period Justin Upton or something. They're going to score more runs than this. Right. I think about just like Friday and Saturday, they had balls to the warning track. Torkelson and Green both lined them off the left field wall. Those balls go out when it's, another 10 degrees hotter. I don't want to turn into everybody's meteorologist here, but it's not the easiest conditions to hit in. You usually see a lot of low scoring games early in the season, unless somebody just melts down and has given up a ton of walks. And I mean, you could look at Lorenzen today and say he was kind of melting down. Like he was making his first start of the year. He wasn't commanding really anything early on, but he just didn't give in. And the Tigers did. They swung at a few bad pitches. And when they did swing at a good pitch, they just tended to chop it right into the defense. And, the Rangers are like the Tigers, but with like a couple of killers in the lineup. That's kind of what it is. They play really good defense. You don't see any like super weak links in the pitching staff, even though they don't have like an obvious ace type, either as a closer or as a dominant starter, at least until they get DeGrom and Scherzer back and see what they've got there. So, I mean, you're probably going to see a bunch of low scoring games this series. I assume it's going to continue on cardiac cats fashion here for a while, at least. But Torkelson's got to get it going. That's just what it comes down to. I don't know that there's any big point to dropping him in the lineup right now because you don't have that much else behind him that's going to come up and do any better. So they're just going to have to ride this out. We can take solace that we still are above 500. Maybe that'll be over by the time the Rangers leave town. But they've just got to hang in there in the early part of the season. And, you know, we all know there's more help coming from the farm system probably. And I don't know that they're going to make a trade either, but I'm sure as hell going to be screaming for one if they're anywhere near, you know, the division lead come July, because to not do that at this point is kind of criminal. It was a frustrating watch today and kind of a microcosm of the early part of the season, but at least they've still won more than they've lost for now.
And I just want to say, I understand that person's comment, their sentiment about, not paying attention anymore because they can't develop hitters, right? Like I used to follow college football recruiting a decent amount. And then what would happen is these five-star players would come up and not be any good. You go, I'll just wait until they actually prove it. And I get that. But, you know, Riley Green's got a 136 WRC plus right now. So does Kerry Carpenter. Those are two guys from the system. It's early. You don't really notice it because because they're not scoring a ton of runs. Canna's 139. The issue, and Matt Vreeling's like 103. All right, that's just Matt Vreeling. Matty V, 103. The issue, of course, you talked about Torkelson, 75 WRC plus, and then you've got Keith is at like 33, Meadows is like 14, Baez is -2. Yeah. Kelly and Rogers aren't really producing. They don't have the depth right now, and the guys down the lineup, they're just really cold. And we talked about it. We really believe that Colt Keith will get things figured out and turn around. I talked about it on a show the other day. Right now, he's and I got an article I'm writing about what's going on with Keith and Meadows. And Keith's batting average is like 70 points below his expected batting average. His slugging's 200 points below. He's the only batter in the majors right now with two outs on balls that have an expected batting average of 930 or better. He's the only one. There were four people in all of baseball last year who had three of those the entire season, and he's already got two. So there's some bad luck. You know, Parker Meadows, is it touching fastballs? Which is strange because that wasn't really an issue for him last year or the year before. It was when he was younger. There's a timing issue there. They got to get figured out, but it's frustrating and I get it, but doesn't mean we can't enjoy what the minors are doing. They're still fun.
And one way or the other, like this stuff is still going to matter. If the team is really good and people leave minors aside and don't want to pay attention that much anymore, That'd be great. I think for some of us, we'd be fine with that because it means the Tigers are good enough that you're totally locked in there. But, the cycle goes on. The organization goes, multi-levels deep and all this stuff matters. You're going to see pitchers coming up from Toledo all year. You might see Bigby, probably going to see, Jace Young at some point. So, we saw Akil Baddoo go off this weekend. If things continue to go the way they are with Parker Meadows, you might see Baddoo back in there. It's the roster is, I just keep trying to remind people this, the roster is not just those 26 dudes. The roster is deeper than that. And there is some help coming, but it does come down to me just kind of to Torkelson. Like, if Torkelson's just hitting 250 and, chipping in a bomb a week or something, you're in a lot better place, even if he's not hot. And having him struggling right now is really kind of killing him.
Especially too, when you look at the fact that Kisten Hira down in Toledo is not—you're not really sure. Let's face it; I mean, he is who he is. Is he going to be your permanent solution at first? No, I mean, but then again, you also look down in Double A, like guys like Jake Holton, same thing. So you're kind of you have to, and even with like the second coming of Jose Bassenio, I mean, he's still in A, and you don't even know he's still in Single A, and B. Well, the actual works out. A, he's still in Single A, and B, at the same time, he's still, as Chris and I talked about this on Thursday, is it a combination of what Chris mentioned? Is it just strength? Is it a combination of just, or is it his bat speed? Does he have that bat speed? And I also, you look at Single A in terms of pitching, it is night and day, comparatively speaking, to High A. And there's a level there where you hope that, I think he could handle. It's not that I doubt that whatsoever, but at the same time, it's also about timing. Like I mentioned, if he gets in the High A now, or like let's say in a month from now, he's still going to face premium pitching. If he gets in the High A towards the end of the summer, well, everybody's gone to double A. You're facing some new college kids. That might not be much of the same challenge. So it's going to be two different types of challenge with that. But either way, regardless, they don't really have an alternative but just to put Torkelson out there.
Yeah, well, you could put Canna at first base, and then you, yeah, you know, send Torkelson down, and then you call up Jahan, plop him in left, and he just goes nuts, right? I don't know. You know, I think something we are seeing, and I wonder if you guys would agree with this, but it just seems like the jump has gotten steeper over the last couple of years from AAA, you know, to the majors. And maybe it isn't as steep from AA to AAA as it was, but it just feels like, you know, we've seen an awful lot of people from Kelenic to, you know, I mean, you can even look at Julio Rodriguez, you know, struggling this season and kind of being streaky early in his career. It's, you know, it's just a challenge. You know, they're game planning the hell out of these hitters, and, you know, you're reacting. You know, you can't game plan for them. You can sit there all you want to and take in information and see their pitches, and, you know, you can dial them into your fancy batting machine if you've got one and all that stuff. But I don't know. If I look at Keith and Meadows right now, it just looks like they've just got too many possibilities in the head, and just need to just shut their mind down and just sit fastball, and just let their kind of natural abilities work. Because Meadows looks like he's just thinking himself out of at bats entirely. And Keith isn't quite as reactive and quick as we're used to seeing him. You know, 98 isn't any slower at Triple A than it is in the majors, but he's a little bit later. You know, he's got more on the cabeza, thinking about breaking balls and everything. And, you know, those guys just have to kind of find their way to like that mental place where you're comfortable. So, you know, hopefully that won't take too long, but yeah. I understand why people are pissed. I understand why they're frustrated, but it is kind of hilarious also to, you know, be like 8-6 and everybody's just, you know, completely enraged. Like, nobody promised you the World Series. I'm sorry. You know, we're still a little ways away, but
yeah. And I think for young guys like Keith and Meadows, it's probably, you probably feel even more pressure when nobody is producing, when the team isn't scoring any, right? Like if the rest of the team was scoring 10 runs and you were struggling, it's fine. Like there was the game the other day where I think Keith and Meadows combined to strike out like 7 times, but the Tigers won 8-0 or 8-2 or whatever. And it was like, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, when it's 1-0 or you're struggling to get any hits, I think there's more pressure there.
Yeah.
But,
and they're going to play those type of games a lot, as we know. You know, they're a run prevention team. They don't have, you know, a couple extra killer hitters like Marcus Semien or Corey Seager or whoever else you want, White, whatever.
I mean, even with a guy like, for example, Jonah, their catcher.
Oh, yeah.
He can have an off day, and he's still going to be a guy who always I find threatening to the Tigers. He had a double, and the Wings did win. Okay, so that is
nice.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Go. So they'll play the original six matchup with the Montreal Canadiens. I love one. One of my missions is to go to a game, Maple Leafs Wings game in Toronto.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, Raymond scored the game tire and the game winner.
All right,
play the old Brass Bonanza.
Let's go, Luke.
Oh wait, you know what? Yeah, I could do that because Brass Bonanza is the greatest.
Is that gonna get a copyright issue?
No, if I play the first 5 seconds of it and then quickly go away from it, no, it's not going to. One of those things, it's one of those songs too on NHL. Every time I hear it on NHL 94, because they played it, I think played it, didn't they?
Yeah, that's how I know it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, for those who are not familiar with this song, we'll begin. Hell yeah. There. Drumming here.
I think they played this in the Queen's Gambit too, didn't they? Like
it's possible.
Yep, they did put this in the Queen's Gambit. You are correct. This song rules. I'm sorry, that song rules. All right, anyway,
that's right up there with the old
60s. Yeah, very 60s
NFL films music.
Yeah,
but anyway,
so. No, by the way, Carlos Pena, fantastic.
Yeah, I'm loving Carlos Pena for sure.
Yeah, when Todd Jones is speaking, I mean, it sounds like Carlos Pena went to Harvard and Todd Jones went to community college when they're both on at the same time. Like, honestly, like, there's like him going, well, my daughter, you know, runs the social media on Bally Sports, and Payne's like, well, what he's doing right here, he's not barreling it up correctly, and he's just going on, and just like sitting there going,
yeah,
I'm learning so much, and Jason's just setting him up.
Yep. And, yeah, it's such a good pairing.
Yeah.
I ran into him in the box the other night, and I was like, man, he's got a face for TV too. That's a handsome fella.
Yeah. Yep. And he's just super polished. And like you say, like, you know, I mean, if Craig Monroe gets around to explaining something, well, it just takes him like four times as long as Pena. He's just very concise. Yeah. And the banter between the two of them is hilarious. You know, we've seen like Gibby and a few of the other kind of old hands, like just taken aback by Benetti's sense of humor and sarcasm and stuff like that. And Pena just seems to fit right in there. I love Petrie too. Like if I can get Petrie and Pena in there with Benetti and no one else except in little bursts, that'd be ideal for me. I'd be happy as a clam. And I see Benetti settling in because he's just getting funnier. And he's going to annoy some people because he is just a chatty, hilarious dude. And but he doesn't miss much. And the broadcasts have been way better, in my opinion. And I think most people agree based on our general surveying.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. It is a total... Yeah, the YouTube user said it correctly. There's a reason why those two guys have national deals as well.
Yeah,
and yeah, definitely correct them on that. So,
yep,
yeah, it is a night and day difference on the broadcast side. Again, nothing against Matt Shepard or anything. He's fine. All right, let's go into our weekly report. We brought this back. It's just been we've not had a chance. The last few weeks has just been running around, and I realized, like Chris mentioned, he goes, "Are we bringing this back?" And I'm like, oh yeah, it's buried in. And it was one of my formats. It was buried somewhere, so I had to dust it off and put it out here. And so, Brandon, you may be familiar with this, but yes, the weekly recap sheets are back. And so, for anybody who watches the podcast, it just makes it easier to see what's going on with all our systems across the board. And Toledo, 9-6 overall. They went 5-1 against Indianapolis, and they beat Paul Skeen. Or was that? With the Paul Skeen game,
that was Friday. I don't recall if they won that one or not. It was a fun, you know, Skeens versus Montero is a lot of fun. Skeens is just mowing people down, but Montero was just as effective. He just walked a couple guys.
They did win that game. Yeah, 4-3. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and for in terms of like even a guy like Devin Sweet, who's done pretty well, who has been quote unquote a starter as kind of like an opener. But the number I really am excited about was Dylan Dingler going 5-for-14 and a period of time. That's good consistency. I'm not sure. I like to see that another week of good at bats. But I mean, in addition to him, we'll get to Justice Bigby here in a second. But I don't know, between Dingler and Badu having and Badu definitely needed to get back off of Schneid a little bit. Overall, I thought it was a very good week for the offense, who scored double digit runs on Saturday and Sunday, I believe.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. They went off. Yeah. It was 13-4, I think in game two on Saturday, and then 16-6. So yeah, there was plenty of power coming. I mean, Dingler, when he got up there last year, you know, I mean, we're all worried about his bat, or if, you know, there's just not a lot of consensus that Dylan Dingler is going to be even as good a hitter as say Jake Rogers. But we all like the defense. So, you know, seeing him go up last year and struggle, I really kind of worried what things would look like for him so far. So it is really, really nice to see him get out to a good start, at least. Hopefully he can build on that, because at some point this year, we know the Tigers are going to need him. So that's good to see. And yeah, Badu, you know, he's probably just going to be fill in material here and there. I'm sure they would, you know, they're going to try to establish Meadows, you know, with everything they've got this year out there, because having him out there defensively is so important. But, you know, the offense does obviously need a spark, and you're kind of looking at anybody that you could call up right now, because you know they're not going to call up Young, and probably shouldn't right now, because he's still whiffing a lot despite doing a lot of damage. So, yeah, good to see from Dingler for sure.
Dingler was leading them in average exit velocity for a little while until Bigby kind of went off at the end of this week. So Bigby's number one at 91.5, but Dingler's 91.4, so not far behind. He's always had that raw power. Yeah. It's just Raj and I have talked about him as being a really frustrating player, because he'll have these good weeks and then he'll go like 1-for-19.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about, there's a pitcher in the system that reminds me of that, but we'll talk about him in the next segment.
Yeah. You just kind of hope that he comes along the way Rogers did, where it never actually got any better for Rogers. He just got more and more selective and understood better and better what he could do and all the things he couldn't, and he stopped trying to do those other things for the most part. You know, maybe there'll be some kind of, you know, simplification process for Dingler that works the same way. You know, there's so much to learn and work on as a catcher that, you know, you can give him a little bit longer. So maybe it won't be until, you know, he's 26, 27 that we really know. But yeah, it would really help things out if he got it going.
For sure.
I just wanted to show this nice blast here by Justin Malloy.
Yeah, that was crushed.
Deep quick center, going back, watching it go. This ball game is tied.
Tie the game there, and
yeah, and then somebody asked, where does Justin Malloy play on defense if he gets called up this season? And it's left field or right field, probably left field. Maybe, I don't know. Right, it's tough in Comerica because left field's so big.
Yeah, right field's easier, really, in most respects. I don't know, what do you guys think about his throwing? Like, as far as, like, if he's throwing from the outfield, he's always had, like, enough arm strength to play third base, but he definitely doesn't have a cannon and wasn't terribly accurate, so.
There was a couple throws last year where we saw him, and basically, this was actually the opening series against Nashville. Nashville's like, we're going to run on you, we don't care. I mean, there's a couple balls that hit the left. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chris. I think there was one where there was kind of an adventure for him out there. It was one of the first fly balls. And
yeah, that was.
They tagged up really easily. His arm, I'm sorry. I don't say it's like Christian Stewart. I think it's a little better than Christian Stewart as far as like accuracy goes, but it's average arm. It's not.
Yeah. You know, he had an outfield assist. I think he threw somebody out at second. I don't know if it was this week or last week, but it's okay.
Yeah.
I don't think, I think he had an adjustment period to the arm motion from the outfield, but yeah, I don't, it's certainly not a weapon, but right. I don't know if it's going to be a huge hindrance either.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I mean, it's so different because you're, for the most part, you're trying to set up. Like if you're running to the ball and guys are running the bases, you're just whipping it in there as soon as you can. But it seemed to me like, you know, watching him at third base, it was more, you know, when he's on the move, when he's off balance, he's not going to make the throws. He just didn't have the mobile platform to make those kind of throws at third base. And I'm sure that's the same in the outfield. But, you know, if you can set up behind it and, you know, do everything perfectly, like one Riley Q Green did tonight and absolutely pegged a dude at home plate, you know, that might be enough. Because Riley doesn't have a cannon either. But, you know, if you do everything right and set up and throw a strike, you know, that's enough under most circumstances.
If you do the Tom Yermansky fundamentals, you'll be fine.
Green it was perfect tonight. You know, really got his momentum moving in the direction right to home plate, and it was a perfect strike. So yeah, I think they said that was his first ever time he's thrown somebody out at home. So he's been an awesome defender this year no matter what, and so I think Malloy will be adequate in the outfield on a Kerry Carpenter kind of level. Maybe sometimes an adventure with sliding for no apparent reason, but I don't know. It's just where they are right now is doesn't seem like they just want to put them on the 40 man, or, you know, that they're using all their options on the 40 man first.
Yeah. And it's tricky because you don't, you know, yeah. Where do you put them? The one flaw with, well, there's a couple flaws with the Tigers roster, of course, but you know, I mean, the one like detail type thing that I don't like about it is that they can't really send anybody down. You know, McKinstry doesn't have an option. You know, Veerling does. I think Ibanez does, but they're not going to send him down. And so it's just hard to get someone else up there. You know, if when Ibanez comes back, Wenzel's going back down, and that's probably going to be what they wrote. Because it's just hard to figure out what to do with them, which makes me kind of wonder why they, you know, it's like either trade him or don't, because either trade him or play him, because I just don't know that sitting in AAA for a whole nother year is going to do anything for anyone other than devalue him. So
I think the biggest thing was we have to wonder if Eddie Leonard was healthy, and if
Crowder did not get
injured, where he even gotten the call. But I mean, then again, he was hitting the ball pretty good. I mean, he was stinging the ball. It wasn't like he was getting cheated or anything like that, and he wasn't looking bad out in right field either. But at this point, you know, when we're down there and hearing that Hinch didn't really want to play him in the outfield unless he really had to, that says something. And so that's where you have to kind of have to wonder, go, okay, well, his future here in Detroit, if you're going to there you have a couple of players that are just trying to figure out exactly what, how to go about it and how to fit them in the lineup already. So it just, I don't know. I would love to think that there would be a long-term future for him here, but I don't know. I don't see it. I mean, I don't know.
If he gets a little better in the outfield and he's not a problem, but it's just, he's got to be a force. And I think, you know, the flip side to the Hinch thing is that if he really believed Malloy was going to come up and just wreck shop, he'd be fine with it. He'd figure out a way to use him. And maybe he's your DH half the time and he's your pinch whip, you know, pinch hitting weapon off the bench or something like that. And maybe we'll see some of that at some point, but I also don't necessarily get the sense that they're that confident that he's going to come right up and mash either. You know, the plate discipline is great, but he's going to see nothing but junk. And as we've seen, he tends to struggle with it. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what to do with that situation. It's one of those awkward roster spots that, you know, and players that just doesn't quite gel that well anywhere. So it would have fit perfectly in with an older Tigers team, you know, 2015 Tigers or something.
So here's something that has confused me a little bit. I thought Eddie's Lannard was on the 40-man roster.
I'm sure he is, but he's not listed for some reason. But if you count him up through, you know, the Tigers PR thing that they sent out today, I went and counted them all up, and he's got to be on there.
Well, I'm looking at the Toledo roster, and it says he's not on the 40-man roster.
Really?
Yeah. I had the same thing earlier this year. I'm like, why is Eddie's Lannard not on the 40-man roster? And he's not there on the Tigers, and he's listed as not on the 40-man on Toledo.
So is it the Nelson Mandela effect where we thought he was on the roster? We thought he was on the roster.
I mean, I thought that was the whole reason they got him, right? That because he was on the Dodgers 40-man roster, and they couldn't, you know, they needed space. And so the Tigers swiped him up. And I thought we would have noticed if they had passed him through waivers at some point or whatever, but I don't know. It's a strange thing because the one thing we didn't mention, that they went and they claimed Ty Adcock from the Mariners today and added him to the 40-man, and they're like, the 40-man's now at 40. And I was like, I thought it already was at 40.
Yeah.
And nobody's on the 60-day IL, and Leonard's not mentioned on the roster, so I don't know.
I
just went through this right here. I've got the 40-man roster. There's 39. 39 guys, so I don't know what's going on.
They added Ty Adcock.
Yeah.
The right-hander from what? Why?
I don't know. They sent him to Toledo.
Yeah, but they never announced like a corresponding, like no one was dropped from the 40 man or DFA'd. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on there.
I mean, his numbers into whatever. What do I know?
Well, he's been hurt. Well, I don't know. The only thing I can say about Ty Adcock is that he does have pretty good stuff and he's been hurt a lot. Maybe that explains some of the wildness, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he was in the big leagues last year, and did he give up a run last year? I don't think he did. Let's see. Oh, no, he did. Yes, he gave up many runs. But 3.45 ERA and 15 and two-thirds innings. He didn't walk anybody. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. They must like something about his stuff. And we'll see. You know, they've done pretty well with acquisitions like this.
It's hard to argue too much with the Tigers in the pitching department.
Yeah. That's why
he's only got less than 50 innings since 2021. So there's obviously been some problems there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I totally missed it. It was probably when I was doing a bunch of the graphics today when I was just.
And Adcock is listed. Yeah. They've got Adcock on the 40 man here. I'm looking right at him, but yeah, I don't
really
know. It's kind of odd. I thought maybe like they did something with Brendan White because he was going to the developmental squad or whatever. I thought maybe there was some injury thing that might pop up there, but. No, I don't know.
It's confusing. So,
well, see, I don't have him here on this version of the 40 man. I don't have him. So, never mind. I see him. Okay, on top. Never mind. Okay.
And Sweet, they cleared through waivers, didn't they?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
he shouldn't do that. All right.
Sweet and Hopkins. Kennedy is still on the 40 man, I believe.
Yeah, correct.
Yep.
Yeah. But I don't know. Maybe we'll have to, you know, I don't know who we would talk to. We'd have to talk to yeah, well, Garko or Scott Harris.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe our boy talked to Jeff Greenberg today and got the answer. I don't know.
Yeah.
There you go. No, yeah. Although I was seeing somebody in Discord saying that Jeff Greenberg is pretty much essentially Ed Harris. Wow. Scott Harris part two. So yeah.
mean, that's
just another McKinsey auditor sent out to explain the corporate policies to you. I mean, as a lowly employee. Anyway.